Interest rates are staying higher for longer. A little bit of uncertainty about the ability for tech firms to deliver, particularly in a subdued economy. Maybe throw in some geopolitical uncertainty. Is it any wonder that tech stocks are taking a bit of a beating? The Nasdaq is down 7% since April 11th. Are we going to enter correction territory? Just a few percentage points off it now. It's Monday, the 22nd of April, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, the US dollar did manage to scrape ahead a little last week after a fairly dormant Friday, but up just 0.1% over the week. By comparison, the yen was down 0.9%, the Norwegian kroner lost 1.1%, and the Aussie and the Kiwi dollar both down about 0.8%. On Friday, the biggest loser of the major currencies, though, was the pound, down 0.5%. We'll come to why in just a moment. It wasn't a great week for equities, particularly Friday. We saw the Nasdaq down 2% on the day and down 5.5% on the week, but the Nikkei did worse. That was down 2.7% on Friday and 6.2% over the week. In fact, the only place where stocks seem to have been doing well was China, it seems, with the CSI 300 up 1.9% last week, even after a 0.8% fall on Friday. But everywhere, Friday wasn't so good. Meanwhile, bond yields were on the rise last week. 10-year treasuries were up 10 basis points for the week, just 4 for Aussie 10-year yields, but up 17 basis points in Italy. Against the trend, Friday saw a 4 basis point drop in 10-year gilt yields. And oil, well, it was well down last week, 3.5% off Brent over the week, but a 4.9% rise in the price of iron ore, even after a slight reversal of fortune on Friday. So can we expect a bit more calm on markets this week, particularly in terms of the Middle East situation? Here's Ray Attrill from NAB in Sydney. It does seem, doesn't it, that the Israeli strikes on Iran, they're not prompting a response from the Ayatollah for now. So a little less geopolitics, it seems. Maybe we can put that one on the back boiler for a while.
Yeah, morning, Phil. Well, let's hope so, at least, anyway. But obviously, you know, wind back to this time last week, and we were saying, oh, you know, the drone attacks on Israel from Iran don't look to have likely to be provoking a further escalation, and things calmed down. And then obviously they, you know, resurrected themselves with a vengeance on Friday morning, our time, obviously, with news of those attacks by Israel on Iran and also was it southern Iraq and also Syria. But certainly the response from Tehran, who's downplayed the incident and said it had no plans for retaliation, means that I think you're right, that I think the Middle East goes sort of back, not quite to the back seat at least, but I think we'll probably play second fiddle, at least in the early part of the week.
It seems like in elsewhere. Both cases they were showcasing what they could do.
That's right. Yes.
Minimum damage. It was sort of like, don't upset us because we could have done this properly.
That's right.
It seemed to be the message. Yeah. But look, anyway, aside from geopolitics, it's not even central banks, is it, that we're really looking at today? Although there's a bit of central bank speak on Friday. It's this big question mark over the tech sector that seems to be the worry at the moment, front and centre, as we kick off this week. It sort of stems a little bit from Netflix earnings. But, I mean, Netflix, I mean, it's we talked about it on Friday morning's podcast because the results had just come in. But, you know, quite a strong negative response. The share price down over 9%, actually, on Friday. But I mean, this isn't a bellwether stock for tech generally, is it? I mean, it's sort of, you know, it's a streaming service. It's not really a you know, the same as the rest of the tech industry.
No, absolutely. But look at the price action across the so-called Magnificent Seven on Friday. It's actually Nvidia. Yeah. The market's that is the tech darling. That's the AI darling. They were down 10% just on Friday. So actually, excuse me, besting the Netflix result. And say, so you mentioned the Netflix results at the end of Friday's podcast, and you know the market was initially cheered by the subscriber numbers, but it was the forward guidance that you know, that really got the market roiled later on in after hours trading. And I think that just puts the spotlight on the earnings guidance that we're going to get from the, you know, the Magnificent Seven, four of whom are going to be reporting this week. We've got Alphabet, we've got Microsoft, we've got Tesla all on Tuesday, and we've got Meta on Wednesday. So I think that is, you know, I think you probably talked about it a little while ago. Were we at sort of peak AI exuberance? And certainly the way that Nvidia's share price behaved on Friday, there would be something to that. So if there's any disappointment as far as forward guidance, now, that said, Nvidia doesn't report until May, then the risk is we'll see a further weakening in those real high-tech bellwethers, which are off. You know, I was just looking at one of the Magnificent Seven indices, and it's off 8.5% in the last six trading days, basically. And
I know we are getting close to correction territory, aren't we? I said in the introduction we're 7% since early April. So we're just a few percentage points off getting into that correction territory. So it could very easily happen this week.
No, that's right. But as I say, again, going back to your intro, the so-called Magnificent Seven have really been trading with a complete mind of their own, haven't they, for most of the last year or so. So, their ability to actually infect the broader market, that's a question mark at the moment. Of the S&P, was down about 1%, but did outperform quite significantly. Interesting that the Nikkei was off, 6% on the week. So actually more than the Nasdaq. So, normally when the yen's weak, and the yen was one of the weakest currencies last week, that normally feeds into positive sentiment for the Japanese stock market in terms of sort of export competitiveness. But the Nikkei's actually gone down by more than the Nasdaq, which suggests that counter is trading more like a tech stock, I think, than an old-fashioned bricks and mortar or industrial counter.
But this is textbook stuff, isn't it? I mean, we've got interest rates. They're going to be higher for longer. So, you're discounting the growth that we're going to see in those tech stocks. And then we've got, subdued demand because of the uncertainty, because of higher prices. So, it's going to be more expensive for them to borrow. They're not going to want to expand as much because there's not going to be as much consumption.
Well, that's for tech stocks generally, that is true. For tech stocks that aren't making any money and they're leveraged up to the hilt, that is... exactly true. But look at the cash that the likes of Nvidia and Microsoft are throwing off, and Alphabet are throwing off.
Yeah.
They don't need the money, effectively. So they're a bit like those, the grey nomads that are relishing higher interest rates because what they're earning on their savings is going up more, and they haven't got debts, for example. So so I think we need to take that to the interest rate argument in some sectors, at least, with a grain of salt as a downward force here.
Yeah. All right. Now, look, what's happening in the UK? Because we've seen a bit of movement in sterling and also in bond yields in the UK. So, there were two things, wasn't there? There was word from the Bank of England and also retail numbers. So the retail numbers came out softer than expected. So I guess people would say, well, okay, that could be a reason for the Bank of England to cut earlier. And then, some clear words on that front coming from the Bank of England as well.
That's right. Dave Ramsden was in Washington, as were most of the great and the good of the central banking world, it seems, on for those IMF spring meetings. But yes, the retail sales numbers certainly got the UK markets off to some of the money markets, at least, got a few juices flowing as far as rate cut prospects are concerned. Retail sales were down 0.3% in volume terms on the month, if you exclude volatility in petrol sales. And it was expected to be up about 0.3. So the only caveat there, I'd say that that was led by 0.7% drop in food sales, and food volumes account for something close to 50% of overall retail sales volumes, excuse me. So not sure quite why the Brits are eating much less food. Maybe they're on a Zempic and they don't they haven't got the taste for sugary treats and alcohol anymore. So maybe there's something there. But I think more significantly, Dave Ramsden, one of the Bank of England deputy governors, said that the balance of risks for inflation were tilted to the downside relative to the MPC's February forecast, such that he now thinks inflation could hold around the 2% target over the next 3 years. So those comments did resonate in money markets. And indeed, we've now got a June first rate cut priced at just over 50%, whereas before Friday's retail sales and those BOE comments, it was closer to a third.
Yeah, it feels like they've got to make their mind up. We seem to be tossing backwards and forwards over when the Bank of England is going to make a move.
But I think it does. And we come on to talk about it now, but there's also that sense of, a lot of the, if you like, dovish speak from central banks about their being close to the point where they can cut rates is obviously now jarring with the messaging coming from the US economic data and the Fed that suggests they could be many months away from cutting rates this year, if at all. So, then that feeds into the argument, well, if we think domestic conditions justify significantly lower rates, what's that going to do to our exchange rate? And how might that then feed back into our inflation outlook? You know, if the result of easing policy well ahead of the Fed is to produce meaningfully weaker currencies.
Yeah, and we could see a lot of that then, couldn't we? Because Austin Goolsbee on Friday from the Fed said fighting inflation, basically the progress on that has stalled. He said we need more clarity before moving. He's one who'd previously been pushing to cut rates sooner. But
that's right.
Now, obviously, pushing for later. So not June or the one after, maybe the one after. I mean, do we have really a solid idea of where this is all going to land?
Well, if you can just tell me exactly what the next three personal consumption expenditure deflators are going to be, Phil, I'll give you a very definitive answer there. But incidentally, and we'll get the quarterly GDP numbers from the US this week, but on Friday we'll get the March PCE number coming out. So I think that will be a keen focus of attention later in the week, at least. But NAB's call, as we talked about in the call last week, we shifted that out to September from originally thinking that they would go in June, but obviously the incoming inflation data have to some extent surprised everybody, and that's the justification for pushing those rate cuts out. And the risks are we got two or three good numbers. July is still possible, but it's also possible that November rather than September becomes more likely, or as you mentioned, perhaps not at all. So it really is challenging, and some of the ECB commentary that we had over the weekend sort of plays to that. Yep. A little bit in terms of the potential euro exchange rate impact from just pushing ahead willy-nilly with rate cuts. That even though, as you would have talked to Gavin and others, the pass-through from the euro-dollar exchange rate to inflation in the eurozone is actually pretty weak. So you'd have to see a quite dramatic fall, I think, to have a material impact on the ECB's outlook for eurozone inflation.
Well, Pantheon Macroeconomics in the podcast over the weekend was saying, yep, they think June and then four successive cuts, and the next three meetings, basically. They said that was their interpretation. They're going to see four successive cuts coming from the ECB.
That's right. And which was, incidentally, that's been our call for the ECB for quite some time. But the only thing we've done post the ECB's meeting last week, and given the incoming Fed rhetoric and shift in pricing there, is that we've actually taken one cut out of our forecast profile. So not violently disagreeing with what our Pantheon guest said on Friday, but we do think the risks now militate against the ECB doing a little less than 100 basis points. Yeah. Compared to our earlier expectations.
So the Fed are going to be last, aren't they, out of the majors, it seems. Well, except perhaps the RBA, but I'll ask about that in a second. But Tiff Macklem from the Bank of Canada said on Friday inflation was edging closer to normal. He said just under 40% of the components of the Consumer Price Index are rising above 3%. So not quite at a normal level, but it's getting close to normal, he said. So that's sounding like, they're going to be cutting a lot earlier than the Fed.
Well, if you look at June pricing, so the next meeting actually is the 5th of June. So it's as far as the June policy calendar is concerned, they're one of the first cabs off the rank there. And markets are currently ascribing about a 60% chance to a 25 basis point rate cut. So I don't think Macklem's comments have added to that speculation, because remember, he said after the last Bank of Canada meeting that a June rate cut was within the realms of possibility, I think was the quote. So so markets will be going into that, I think, thinking it's more likely odds on that they will actually move, obviously depending on what happens in the intervening period.
A lot of relief for a lot of people. They've got such high housing debt, haven't they, in Canada. So a lot of people are going to be relieved by that. So what about Japan then, going the other way? So Japan's CPI on Friday, 2.7%, down from 2.8%, which was as expected. Take out food and energy, and it rose to 2.9% on the year. So, obviously above their 2% target. But is it going to move them to do anything at the Bank of Japan meeting this week?
Probably not. I mean, if you believe some of the local media reports, then what they might do this week is actually lift their inflation forecasts relative to the previous iteration. But if you look at the measure that the Bank of Japan officially targets, is the headline CPI ex fresh food. And that 2.6% read was down from 2.8%, and it was a little bit lower than the 2.7% expected. So certainly certainly you'd say there's no smoking gun there for the Bank of Japan to contemplate doing something. But, you know, we have had comments from Governor Ueda over the last couple of weeks saying that currency weakness could feed into their inflation forecasts to the point where it could potentially provoke action. And, you know, given that, as we've talked about the weakness of the yen and how that's spilling into, you know, Asian currencies generally, even though that the PBOC in China by and large has resisted the temptation to match yen weakness in order to preserve its competitiveness vis-a-vis Japan, it's not completely out of the realms of possibility that they sneak in a rate cut as early as this week. I think it's unlikely, but an upward revision in inflation and surrounding commentary could put the market on notice that we could be in for a succession of sort of 0.1% increases and somewhat more than the money market pricing, which I think has still only got between 1 and 2 10 basis point rate hikes priced in between now and the end of the year. So that will be important, I think. And if we get a repeat of the sort of very dovish messaging, the risk is that that will be the green light for another move higher in dollar yen that will have ramifications throughout the sort of dollar Asia, including, I might add, the Aussie dollar.
All right. Well, look, it's fairly quiet today, isn't it? I mean, geopolitics aside, over the weekend, of course, or the tail end of last week, the House in the US passed the $61 billion aid deal for Ukraine, which might help things in that part of the world. The downside is, of course, could this be the last big aid package? Because we wait and see who sits in the White House next. It seems if Donald Trump's in control, maybe they'll be less forthcoming with that. But data-wise today, well, credit card spending for New Zealand, the business pessimism index for the UK, Christine Lagarde talking early tomorrow morning. I think that's just about it, isn't it? So, I mean, other than the Bank of Japan.
One thing I'll add that the China loan prime rates are due to be published this morning. We're not looking for any change, but there's a possibility there. But, I think we're getting off to a very quiet calendar. But, of course, it's CPI here in Australia on Wednesday, and then those GDP numbers from the US on Thursday, followed by the March PC numbers on Friday. And we also get the flash PMIs. I think they're going to be mention as well. So the calendar certainly does thicken up, you know, alongside, as we said, those earnings reports with three of the Magnificent Seven reporting after the close on Tuesday.
Very good. We'll catch you soon, Ray. Thank you for getting up this morning. We'll see you soon.
Hello. Thanks, Phil.
And we're just 5 podcasts this week because we've got Thursday off for Anzac Day, of course, and the weekend edition as usual. But I'm back tomorrow morning for another one. Join me for that. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. I'll see you then.